Hi, it's great to have your company. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toth.
You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, it's Easter time. And if you're anything like me, you're looking forward to having 4 days off. The Easter long weekend's the only 4-day weekend we get all year, and it's probably the first break many of us have had since the Christmas break, so we're kind of ready for it. But sometimes you might think that our eagerness for 4 days off work at this time of year misses the point a bit about what Easter is really about. Of course, you don't have to be Christian to know that Easter is a religious event marking the death and resurrection of Jesus. But our culture prioritizes work so much that it's not easy to think about Easter in those terms, even for Christians. So, Justine Toth, you've been thinking about questions of work and its relationship with rest lately. We want to talk about that today. Rest, work, Easter. How do you regard Easter in relationship to those terms?
Well, I do think, unfortunately, that I do look at Easter as a time to go, 4 days off. Which is terrible because I'm a Christian and this is the source of my hope, my comfort, etc. And yet at the same time, I'm like, yay, I don't have to go to work for 4 days. But I've been reading the work of this German philosopher, Joseph Pieper, lately. And he pointed out that we live in this culture of total work. And that phrase, I think, just says it all, really. And he talks about how this culture of total work just values efficiency and productivity so much so that we feel really guilty if we're not being productive. You know, we are wasting time. It's a finite resource. So given that we live in this culture of total work, it's not surprising that I start to view Easter in these terms, like more of a break from work rather than anything else and like any chance to reflect on the significance of the event.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. I know there have been times in my life where as I've started a holiday, the first few days you sort of feel a bit weird and uncomfortable and almost guilty that you're not working. I tend to get over that pretty quickly, I have to say. But it seems like at least for some of us, we have a dysfunctional relationship with work. We know that workaholism has terrible effects on family, on personal health, on community and so on. But there's also a sense of pride that goes with this. I think especially in the big cities where, you know, we can mask being a workaholic with being this sort of great worker who outstrips everyone else in the hours we do. And, you know, I've heard people say, oh, who needs sleep? You know, we can just power on.
Man, I need sleep.
And there's this is part of this total work culture, isn't it? This pride in being able to work harder than everyone else.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think today a lot of us get our identity, our status, our purpose from work. And you could argue that this is because in some ways we've moved past questions of God in this area. We used to get our identity from God. But now we get it from work because we live in a godless kind of universe for many of us anyway. And that can easily become the basis on which we judge our value and worth. How well do we work? So that whole drive for meaning and identity is completely part of total work culture. And of course, you know, if we think about our technology as well, I mean, we love it. We absolutely love being able to access everything on demand all the time. But it does blur the boundaries between work and life. You know, you've got greater flexibility. You can work from home if you want because you can easily access your work. But there's a real cost to that as well because it's like you're taking your office everywhere with you, you know. This is all part of the total work culture.
I remember overhearing a girl on a bus talking about the fact that she'd been really sick that week and her boss had couriered her laptop to her home so she could keep working. I thought, man, that's a losing perspective.
If you ever do that to me, Simon, I will quit.
yeah, promise not to. But seriously too, I have to stop myself from checking because, as you say, we're connected with these phones and devices. I have to, you know, physically stop myself sometimes on, say, on a Sunday from checking emails and other things that are related to work. So it takes a bit of a conscious effort on my part.
Absolutely. I mean, Joseph Pieper says that actually there's no room for rest in a total work culture. If anything, rest is viewed as an opportunity just to recharge so you can get back into work. And so you can see that in the way that I've been talking about Easter, but I found this article that says, relax, you'll be more productive. And it's based on this guy, Tony Schwartz. He has this energy project that basically says that if you learn to do less, you will actually do more. So he's arguing for rest. He's saying that workers should be working in 90-minute bursts and taking more breaks and longer vacations. And, you know, we all like the sound of that, obviously. But he's quoting, it's quite interesting as well, he's quoting research that says air traffic controllers who work the night shift, if they're given about 40 minutes to nap and if they sleep for an average of 19 minutes, their reaction time and their alertness improves, you know, immeasurably. And that is really important, obviously, when you are responsible for not having planes crash into each other. And you've also got basketballers who were encouraged to sleep for 10 hours at night, and then that improved their shot rate by an average of 10%. So that also can matter as well. So I really do like aspects of this work because it's realistic. It acknowledges that if you sit at a computer for 8 hours a day, then you are not necessarily working at your optimum capacity for that whole time.
See, my desire to sleep in is a good thing, right? I'll be more efficient.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of good things to this, but it also does seem to convey this idea that we need to justify rest. The only reason you would rest is because it makes you a better worker. So it doesn't seem to value rest in its own right. And to find out more about this, I caught up with Cara Martin, who's the Associate Dean of the Marketplace Institute at Ridley, Melbourne. Now, she's been long thinking about matters of work, life and rest, and so presumably she has some thoughts about this. So here she is. Thanks for joining us, Cara.
Oh, pleasure.
Now, on the program today, we're talking about matters of work and rest in relation to Easter. And it strikes me that these days we seem to view rest not as something desirable in and of itself, but as what will recharge us so that we're better equipped to go back to work. So in this sense, the Easter long weekend is a good opportunity to have a break. But surely there's more to rest than that. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. I think just as we were made to work, we're actually made to rest as well. That the Creator who made us worked at it and he also rested. And that's a pattern that I think established for us. I think one of the really sad things about our society is that we work hard at everything, and we even work hard at our leisure and our rest, in inverted commas, rather than actually resting. And I think we just get in this terrible cycle of just taking caffeine in all its forms to keep ourselves going, whether it be soft drinks or coffee or energy drinks or even pills. And then we get so overstimulated that we suddenly need something to make us rest and make us sleep. And we take herbal remedies that are actually strong chemicals to make us rest, or we take pills to make us rest, and we just get in this terrible cycle. And there's so much evidence from psychologists that our brains are hopelessly overstimulated and that we're actually overwhelmed with pleasure even, and that we have lost the ability just to simply rest in many ways, that it seems almost in our society that if you say that you just did nothing, then people think, oh, there must be something weird with you, or you wasted your time. But in fact, nothing can be a very nurturing thing for our bodies and our minds and our hearts and our spirits.
We will get back to that in a moment, but I want to talk briefly about identity. You know, we live in a time where we often think about our identity in terms of the work that we do, because, I mean, obviously we meet someone and we say, oh, what's your name and what do you do? But what are the limits of viewing ourselves in this way?
I think that's a very dangerous way to look at ourselves, because it's viewing ourselves as something we actually have very little control over. We actually tend to view ourselves in terms of our output and our outcomes in a lot of ways. A lot of times we measure ourselves by how much we're paid or our status in our job or things like that. And those things are things that we can't always have much control over. If we only see our work as effective by what happens as a result of it, then it can actually be a really skewed way of measuring our worth. I'll give you an example. Like for a nurse, a nurse's work is actually to care for someone who is sick. But if you actually measure the output, is the output of that person's work only valuable if the person that is being nursed gets well? Of course, that's a very difficult thing to base yourself on, because you have no control over that.
And in fact, people may die. Yeah,
most of us live do work that is incredibly complex and involves with lots of other people, and we can't always control what the actual value of the output is.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point about how we tend to base our worth on the output, and then this means that we actually can't rest, right, because you could always do better. So you work for the Marketplace Institute, and that focuses on helping people to think through the connections between their work and faith. So do you think that we need a theology of rest, and how might that help us to think through work so it's not a burden to us, but neither is it the sum total of our existence?
That's exactly right. I think you've summed that up well, actually. We need to actually be able to have a lot more balance in the way we see ourselves made, that we're made for work, we're made for rest, also made for relationships. We're made for lots of different things, and all this stuff gets out of kilter if we measure ourselves the way that society tends to measure ourselves. What we actually need is to look at some of the ancient rhythms that have been actually put in place for us to get the rest we need to nurture our bodies, our minds, our hearts, but also, crucially, our spirits. Augustine said the most amazing thing that I come back to whenever I'm just on a terrible rush mode is, "You, God, have made us for yourself, and our hearts find no rest until they rest in you." And that's the ultimate rest, resting in God and finding a resting place in God.
So in light of that, how are you going to spend the Easter long weekend? I know you're a very busy woman. How are you going to fight the urge to do some work?
Well, I am really glad that we have already decided that we will go interstate for Easter. I'm crossing my fingers at this point, but I really think I might even leave my computer behind.
Wow.
I know, that's a huge sacrifice. But my family and I are going interstate, and I am really looking forward to having that complete break from work. We're going to spend time with friends, and we're going to spend time reflecting actually on what Easter is about, because you're right, you can get so into the rush of things that you forget this incredibly important time is coming when Jesus did his greatest work, which was dying and rising. And I'm really looking forward with my family to being able to celebrate that and really experience that this Easter.
Wonderful. Well, happy Easter, Cara. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, that was Cara Martin of Ridley Melbourne's Marketplace Institute talking about work and rest. Justine, Cara was talking about Jesus doing his greatest work at Easter. What did she mean by that?
I think what she means is that it's Jesus' work that allows us to be right with God. You know, the Easter story is about Jesus going to the cross in our place because of the way that we've mistreated him and the way that we have failed to honour him as well as each other. But, you know, we can't make that up to him. We are utterly helpless in this area, which is obviously a huge blow to us because everywhere else we have this I achieve mentality, and that's like fostered by this total work culture that I was talking about earlier. But, you know, Easter reminds us that we cannot be right with God on the basis of our own efforts. So I think what she's doing is pointing to the theological dimensions of rest. Jesus wins for us a rest that we just can't achieve on our own. And when we rest in that, we acknowledge that we just are helpless in one regard, and that we receive versus everywhere else in our life where it's all about I achieve.
Yeah, so while we see Easter rightly as a good time to have a break from work and a recharge, I suppose, for all the work that we end up doing, if we only see it like that, we're missing a key part of Easter, aren't we? And that just plays into this I achieve mentality that you mentioned, Justine. But you're talking about Easter as a chance to receive and a chance to really rest, truly rest, because our work doesn't apply when it comes to relationship with God, doesn't have any cash value. Mm. And so there's a huge benefit to be gained when we start to see Easter in those terms. So, Justine, what are you going to do this Easter?
Well, funnily enough, I have to work. But I'll be at an Easter festival up in Toowoomba doing some seminars here and there. So they are spaced pretty, you know, like they're spaced evenly. So there'll be plenty of opportunity for me in the midst of all that work to rest, and rest in the sense that we're talking about here. But it is ironic that I'm going to be working at Easter.
It was great to have that discussion, Justine. I hope you can join us next time on Life and Faith when we talk to Major Brendan Nottle from the Salvation Army. Brendan happens also to be the chaplain of the Collingwood Football Club, which means he's got some interesting stories to tell. He'll be talking about his work with the Salvos in the urban part of Melbourne with troubled youth and other people who are needing help. Now, look forward to talking to Brendan then. Thanks so much for your company. We wish you a happy Easter.